5 seconds.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi.
And welcome to Barlingham Barrett. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'm joined by my very good friend, veteran trial lawyer, Manny Barling. Manny, good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. We're going to have an interesting show today, more on the election. And today we're going to have as a special guest, Ashley Brooks, my co-author, who's going to discuss a lot of women's rights, and John Perry, our resident expert on libertarian economics, who's probably going to attack the right of women today. Are you, John, you going to attack women today?
Not at all, Manny. I love women.
Okay. Hey! Then the women have a chance. Anyway, John, welcome to the show. And so we're going to have a little bit of fun, aren't we, Simon?
Oh, we are indeed. And before we get into the politics, I have to tell you that the best story I found all week, politics is front and center, but there are other news stories out there. And my absolute favorite happened on Friday. Pennsylvania resident John Reed filed a police report that his 1973 Winnebago had been attacked by a Sasquatch.
A Sasquatch, huh?
Yep. Bigfoot apparently threw rocks at the Winnebago and broke some of the windows. In a remarkable coincidence, Mr. Reed just happens to be a Sasquatch hunter and recently opened a Facebook group on the subject, devoted entirely to the efforts of tracking down the elusive beast.
Wow, we definitely got a hot one going there. And he's where, in Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Wow, I usually those guys are spotted in Oregon, right, John?
Well, I was thinking, Simon, if you need an alibi, call Dan McCann. That's his expertise, developing alibis.
Maybe somebody should use less Rogaine on their body. But I'm amazed, and by the way, this person is a registered Republican voter. That's even more alarming.
Oh, of course.
You mean the Sasquatch?
No, the Sasquatch is registered 3 times as a Democrat. He's voting no matter what you say.
Exactly. So Manny, where should we where should we begin the fun and games?
Well, you're going to cause me to hit quickly before we get to another topic, voter fraud, because, for all we know, this guy's accused of voter fraud was just throwing a Sasquatch's registration in the trash and probably didn't do anything wrong. What do you think, John?
Well, I think it's about time Republicans got in the game and even the playing field.
Oh, I see. So there's now courses, like in Chicago and places where they can vote, they can learn to vote 10 times using different names?
Yeah, well, how do you think your boy Kennedy got elected?
Probably doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, there was an old story when I was growing up about Lyndon Johnson that if they recounted his election, they would have found that half the people voted and been dead for at least 10 years. So it's been said of a lot of different politicians over my lifetime.
You know, I have never met a Sasquatch that has lied.
Well, you haven't seen the Sasquatches from Florida yet, have you?
Maybe not. But, do voter laws allow for Sasquatches to vote?
That's a good point. Can they? Because we don't have a literacy exam anymore because we're afraid that very few Americans can pass it. And that includes guys with high school and college educations. And give you some idea how bad it is. I've always loved this story. I have a friend of mine owns a body shop. So you know you're not going to find a lot of rocket scientists working in body shop. And if there is one working in a body shop and I've offended him, I apologize. But the simple fact is that you don't find them there. So one day where I was in there having one of my cars worked on, they were having lunch. So I joined the guys for lunch. They started talking. Someone said to me, you know, what have you been doing? I said, well, my wife and I just got back from Italy. And he said, where's that? I said, you know, Italy. So I kind of looked at my friend and figured it was one of his employees. I didn't really want to embarrass him. I dropped him in. My friend wouldn't let it go. He was the boss. And he said to him, you know, Italy. You know, you remember studying Italy in high school? Well, kind of, you know. These were all guys who were high school grads. And he said to him, remember, it looks like a boot. And they're going, a boot? I mean, I sat there through this going, I don't believe I'm listening to this. So here we were, a bunch of high school graduates who didn't know where Italy was, and yet they're allowed to vote in our country, and I think that's a big problem. What do you think, John?
Where's Italy, Manny?
I knew you were going to do that.
I'm Italian.
You find French food and turn left. That's what you do. But no, that's one of our biggest problems in this country. Is our country
I actually would like to know, Manny, I would like to know, is the boot leather? what leather is it? I really prefer my Italy to be ostrich. Oh, wait, I can't get that there, can I?
So now you're hearing a woman's point of view on voting. They know the really important
thing. That's right. Do they have my size?
Yeah. So, yes, that is a problem. And when it comes to voter fraud, you're right. But I've never seen anyone physically caught trashing votes. Have you, John? I've never heard of that.
Not that I can recall, but I'm sure it happens, Manny. I remember when Al Gore didn't want the military's votes counted in 2000.
Not a bad idea. Depends on which party you're in.
Yeah, what are you basing this on, John?
The truth.
Oh, okay. And where did this truth come from?
He sued because they didn't get him in on time. And, it was a technicality, and he didn't want them counted because they didn't meet the deadline.
Now, the real issue with them is whether or not they've been altered, John.
No, I think just because they didn't get him in on time, Manny, that he wanted to stand on precedent that they not be counted.
No, the argument, as I recall it, was that what had happened is there were some allegations that somebody had tampered with them, and that's why they were late. And because the Supreme Court and everybody were looking at this position where it's too bad you sort of take it where it is, and his position was, okay, if I accept that, then why would you count the military if they can't, because their votes could have been tampered with as much as the Chads and the rest of them. That's a fairly valid point, but it was, a little tasteless.
Well, I'll defer to your recollection. You're a lot older than I am.
Thank you. Well, usually that's the reason why I don't recollect things, John, not why I do.
You know what, Manny? It helps as you get older, too, because now you can give better advice, at least to me, because you have fewer examples of recent bad behavior.
True. Well, I think, look, bad behavior goes on in our country every day. As our population gets higher, it's harder to find this bad, conduct and expose it. You know, we have a time where someone can shoot somebody in one state and disappear in other states. It's not as bad as it was 100 years ago where there was no news and none of the other stuff. But the fact is, we still are reaching a population point where it's hard, which is the next topic I wanted to get into, which is Planned Parenthood, because so much has been said since Romney's comments about Planned Parenthood. I thought it was important for everybody to understand, first of all, what Planned Parenthood is. And Ash, I know you, as a woman, you know a lot about these women's issues. And take a moment and tell our audience what Planned Parenthood is really about.
Well, the thing that everybody talks about with Planned Parenthood consistently is it's all about abortion. That the only reason Planned Parenthood is around is abortion. This is Antichrist. This is, you know, the whole thing. And what people need to realize is that Planned Parenthood is taking care of elements of women, such as screening for cancer. Yes, they're helping with contraceptives. They help with pregnancy testing. That means early detection of problems. It takes care of vaccinations, such as your papillomavirus. I can never say it, and don't ask me to repeat it. And they have health. They have a place to go to for their health. They also have health care. They'll give them pregnancy options, counseling, so they get counseling. They have sex health education. Women who are in menopause can go there for menopause treatment. Again, STD testing, if they need a vasectomy, tubal ligation. There's things that Planned Parenthood has done that has helped people a lot more than what the Republican Party is talking about. And what's interesting is that Planned Parenthood came about during the Nixon administration, and in that administration, they proceeded to say the liberals were pro, they saw it as a contraceptive axis of increasing family control over their lives. The conservatives said, we're going to keep people off welfare. So here you have Planned Parenthood, who is like physically helping people. Laws have been created. 1970, there was federal funding that occurred by Richard Nixon. The Law of the Family Planning Services and Population Research Act was instituted at that time, and Title X. And this provided for people that no American woman should be denied access to family planning assistance because of her economic condition. So on one hand, the conservatives are saying, we're going to kick everybody off of welfare, and you're no longer going to have access to Planned Parenthood. And if you have an abortion, you could actually probably go to jail because they were trying to eliminate Roe versus Wade. And we're going to... you're not going to have access to welfare. You're not going to have access to Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood handles people with HIV. They handle rape victims, which I'll go through those stats later. And so, therefore, this is something that when every time Romney says, first thing out of his mouth that last debate was, first thing I'm going to do, get rid of Big Bird and Planned Parenthood.
Well, let me jump in with some numbers that bother me. Because I look at it as economics issue. First of all, Planned Parenthood has a staff of 27,000 people. So if it goes out of business, that's 27,000 more Americans looking for work. And the reality is that abortion services make up less than 3% of the total of what they do. And while Ashley points out all the other issues, that, for example, they do more than 1 million screenings for cervical cancer a year and over 900,000 for breast exams. These are critical to women when you're talking about a 3% abortion. And my feeling sometimes when people want to wipe out Planned Parenthood is they want to return those people back to the base of supposedly, you know, private industry where people can make money on them. But the problem is that I believe that the something like 60-70% of their the people who go to Planned Parenthood are but 150% below the poverty line.
It's more than that. It's 75%.
Right.
They serve over 5 million clients a year, and 26% of which are teenagers under the age of 19. These poor children who are nutritionally starving, because 75% of their clients have incomes at or below 150% of the federal poverty level. This means that you're going to have a teenager who has an unwanted pregnancy, who is nutritionally imbalanced, who may be carrying an HIV baby, who may have STD, who may be passing that along to a baby. And so along with all of this, you have an inability. You're going to cut out Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood is to help that child who is a teenager child raise a child or be able to have health issues handled so that she can carry that child. So if you're going to eliminate that, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen?
Come over to you for a minute with this. I want to go to John for a moment. You know, John, I know that a lot of your issues have to do with costs and government and intervention, but I wonder how you feel about the fact that if we have people living at a poverty level, having children unchecked, that what we're in the end, what we're doing is expanding a population of potential criminals. And while China has different reasons for birth control, they're rising concern about the amount of population. We should be concerned about the fact that the last 20 years we've been creating a generation of criminals, and the likelihood is that by cutting out Planned Parenthood, we probably will be creating even more. Do you disagree with that?
Well, I disagree with the whole philosophy. I think Planned Parenthood, as I stated on earlier programs, and other government agencies have replaced the role of the family. And I think this is just another example where you're promoting the extinction of the family.
Don't think the family is already extinct in poverty areas where there's single parents?
Yeah, that's why, Manny. Don't worry about it. The government will take care of you.
Wait.
Do you know that large donations are coming from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation? Large foundations such as Buffett Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Turner Foundation, the Coleman's, and others. So this is not all government. This isn't coming out of your tax dollars, John. This is actually coming out of people who are so believe in helping women and women's rights. A woman has rights, John. You may not believe that, but they do. And in today's market, you cannot ever ignore those rights. And by eliminating Planned Parenthood, which was, you know, in 1916 when it started, the woman who started it was arrested and went to jail because women did not have any rights. And if you take us back to 1916, that's what will happen when you eliminate Planned Parenthood. It's a fact. Those who do not study history, well, you know, Santayana's quote is it right now. You better know your history before you start talking about it, because that particular history is a very sensitive issue, and it's a health issue. It's just not about families taking care of families. This is about poor families who know nothing about sex, who have, you know, little 10, 11-year-olds who have been raped, who have incest within their families, who have poverty that you and I have never experienced, thank God, John. That you know, this is about a whole different issue. This is Planned Parenthood is not about what the, and I'm so upset when I go into the internet and I look through material that the Planned Parenthood is being put out by pro-life, and I look at their stats and how they've twisted stats around. I go, do they not even have a calculator in front of them?
Well, they must subscribe to Romney's theory of economics. You know, it's rare, John, that I ever hear Ashley challenge you on history as well as she knows you. So you want to retort to that one?
I was going to say, I'm glad she mentioned 1916, because I hadn't realized Nixon played such a seminal role in the development of Planned Parenthood.
It took till 1970 to get changes done, John. Planned Parenthood, you're going to go back to that part of the history. No, the whole history. 1970 became a change. That's how long it took for women to have rights.
Okay, I have to jump in. And I'm going to pick on John just because he's my
Bring
favorite
Bring it on, Simon.
Target.
I love you.
Right. What do you have against Planned Parenthood? You know, if you, you know, take the abortion bit out,
3%.
And look at all the rest of the pluses. You know, why is Planned Parenthood such a bad thing? I mean, well, come to that. You know, what's wrong with Big Bird?
I guess you could use the same argument, Simon. And just to set the record straight, Planned Parenthood, people can look her up, was started by a woman named Margaret Sanger.
Right.
Who started the organization because she was a notorious racist who wanted to keep black babies from being born. So you can cite all the history you want, but that was her original intent.
Wow. And I wonder why Martin Luther King accepted that award from them.
Well, Hitler took a lot of his beliefs from Margaret Sanger and other people. So, But I would say this, Simon, to answer your question. I'm against federal funding of it. Certainly it should exist. All these people who donate to it, that's their right. And it shouldn't be a political issue, I don't think. But when there's federal funds involved, there's going to be theft, waste, and abuse, because these organizations are going to exist to take in government money. And that's my problem with it, no oversight.
Well, John, there's theft and abuse in every business in the United States except the one you run yourself and you're able to stop it yourself.
Annie, that's it, though. The buck stops with the business owner. And with the government, there's no accountability because there's no checks and balances.
Do you know what they call people in the that have those kind of small businessmen who have thefts in their business? They call them clients, and they line up in my office and every other lawyer's office and tell some story about how a bookkeeper or somebody stole from them. And I mean, I hear it my entire career. It's just like,
but also many. Then you also have Planned Parenthood making political donations to candidates, and that's a conflict of interest there too because they're receiving tax dollars.
Well, under the current Constitution, it seems to me everybody, including my dog, can make contributions. And
no, don't tell Bogey that. He'll be upset. He'll be taking away from his shrimp lot.
Well, I didn't mention my cat because I know it's political persuasion. but seriously, you support Citizens United and the right to everybody to be able to make whatever donation they see fit. So why do you object to a non-profit protected...
Because it's a vicious cycle. If you're receiving taxpayer money and contributing it to campaigns, that's not your money you're contributing. It's taxpayer dollars, and then
but
you're...
But, John, if you're going to...
Wait. Does that include all the people who do that in the Republican Party?
If there are any, of course.
Yeah, because that is quite common even in the Republican Party. It's just become a way of life in our country that I consider deeply distressing.
Well, it goes across the board, though, Manny. We've talked about this before, where the problem is that, John, it's just not limited to Planned Parenthood, and there does need to be a major change in this, some kind of lobby or some kind of something, not lobby, but some kind of law that's going to change this, because Monsanto goes in. I was just watching a video the other day, and they have now taken and gone into the universities and are preaching their propaganda. We think about it. Monsanto, the GMO people, are actually funded by their partner, the United States government, which are tax dollars. So we now have our tax dollar going into Monsanto. You have a tax dollar going into your pharmaceutical companies that is then going out and preaching to your doctors who are then being told limited information and that you must tell this information, and there's enough backing to prove that they've actually caught professors at universities. And when you look at that and you go, this goes across the board. It doesn't just stop at Planned Parenthood. It's a whole history of it, and it's going across the board. And, John, yes, I don't agree with this at all. I think it's terrible that our tax dollars, and we have no control of where our tax dollars are being spent. But that is Republican or Democrat.
Ashley, I have to ask you, you're a very intelligent lady, and I know that you watch the political climate.
And just be careful, Simon. There'll be no living with her if you keep this.
Really, I'm going to keep replaying this.
Right.
I had to convince that she should be barefoot and pregnant. Look what you're doing.
Right.
And I provided him with two cats. What can I say?
But, I mean, you must be annoyed. In fact, more than annoyed that women are being downtrodden. I think that's the best way to view it. You know, why can't you have your own views? You know, make your own choices. You know. Who has the rights to tell you what you can and can't do?
I absolutely agree with that, Simon. I think Romney said it best in the one moment that he got caught during the debate, where he proceeded, somebody said, so, you know, what about us women? And he proceeded to say, you know, I hire all these women, and I do this great thing for all these women, and I make sure they get home to make dinner.
Right.
Come on.
Binders
nothing about
full of them.
that to me sums it up. And if women really stop and listen to what they are saying and close your eyes, don't even, just close your eyes so you can't even hear what, you can't look at the face and you can't see the person who's saying it, and ask yourself, what did that person really say? That person did not say, I made sure my employees, my women, received the same pay as the men.
Well, he never said that.
He never said it once. He never once said anything other than, I made sure they got home to make that dinner, pick up those groceries, and take care of those kids.
Ashley, let me ask you a question in your opinion.
Yeah?
Who do you feel treats women better, Romney or Clinton?
Oh, John.
That's typical John.
That's
thing.
Typical John. I love you, John.
I asked an uncomfortable question.
It's not an uncomfortable question.
No.
No. The bottom line is that you suddenly have become very moralistic about Clinton, where in countries, guys, you know, rulers, excuse me, prime ministers, et cetera, have the mistress of their choice, and everybody thinks it's normal. And it was pretty much normal here because almost every president, Johnson, even Roosevelt in a wheelchair, was having an affair with his secretary. That's just a male human experience. Because you haven't done it, it doesn't mean that 99% of the other men in the country don't do it.
Ashley, do you not want to answer that? Is it too difficult?
No, I think she finds your question silly. But go ahead, Ashley. Last one.
What was the question again? That was so long ago, I've forgotten.
It was a comparison to Clinton. It was, you know, he's trying to make a point about.
I find it interesting that when you look at Romney, now his wife, isn't his wife a lawyer? Isn't she a lawyer?
No, she's just another Mormon, you know, woman who lines up and goes, yes, dear, no, dear, and falls on the ground for him. No different than all the other Mormon women you and I know in Los Angeles.
Yeah, because her whole life has been, she's not worked, right? Am I right?
Never.
She's never worked. And her whole life is about, you know, this man who supports her and doing whatever he orders her to do. Well, that's fine if that's what the Mormon Church preaches and that's what the way they want to live their life. But in it, women need to remember they have rights.
Simon,
we're human beings who have rights.
Simon, who's demeaning women here, saying raising five kids isn't work?
Oh, hey, being a
five kids
a housewife,
is work.
Being a housewife,
it's hard.
Is a job, but understand something. You know, if you just happen to marry a guy by the name of Mitt that has more money than, you know, he can possibly count, Ann Romney, she's never cleaned a dish in her life.
Wow.
It's a fact.
You know, and, you know, John, in all fairness about this, you know, housewives are housewives. Most of them participate in their husband's work in some form or another, and I applaud all of them, and I think it's wonderful.
I've certainly done it, Manny.
I'm not saying you're criticizing me, Ashley. But I don't think that's the point. The point is that women who don't work and live in that atmosphere lead a very cushy life and don't have a huge amount of stress when their husband's making money. And the bottom line in this world, and every listener will agree with me, when you're making money, marriage is very, very easy. Gosh, your wife loves you, you're handsome.
Manny, let me ask you, I've pointed this out on other shows. Don't you find that people are a lot more willing to close their eyes to the shortcomings of their political allies for practical purposes than other people with whom they disagree? Look at Bill Clinton. This guy's a champion of women's rights. And if any of us treated women like that, we'd be in jail.
No. Every guy treats women
just like him.
Where do you get that from?
All you get is a big, dry cleaning bill.
Oh, he didn't save the evidence, Simon. He could have denied it if he did.
Are you telling me there's no sex in the workplace, John?
Manny, that's not the point. You know what I'm saying.
Well, no, I know what you're saying. You're saying there's something unique about him having sex in the workplace.
No, I'm talking about selective morality.
No, when it comes to male and female relationships, neither sex uses a great deal of morality. I see just as many women in the workplace chasing married men and vice versa. And
Danny, I'm talking about how him and his mouthpieces went out day after day and demeaned, defamed, demonized all his accusers who were women. And then he's supposedly a champion of women's rights. I find it ironic.
I think that I admire the fact that he has turned around and he is doing positive things. I was extremely disappointed in him at the time it happened. I was shocked at the ability and the exemplary, wonderful way in which Hillary handled it, because I don't think I would have been as understanding as she was.
Oh, yeah.
And so for me...
Excuse me, guys.
And so I think that it's about human nature. And in that human nature, I want to get back to Planned Parenthood, because that is human nature. Sex happens. Whether you like it or not, it's going to happen. And the World Health Organization, because this is something that is really, this is a very big issue for women's rights, John. And yes, John, I was extremely disappointed in Bill Clinton. And I have difficulty, I listen to him with closed eyes to hear what he really says at times. I do. I want to make sure I want to hear what he's really
like
saying.
Arnold?
Pardon?
You like Arnold?
Arnold? I'm extremely disappointed in Arnold. And but I also realized that Arnold is from Europe, and if you spend any time in Europe, they have different rules in Europe. It is common for them in Europe, and that's part of their culture, that a man is allowed to have a mistress. It's just the way it is in Vienna. I know I got hit on a lot there. So it's like, you know, and shocked. I would be shocked. I'd say I'm married, and they're like, so? It didn't matter. And so it's a different culture and a different rule over there that is shockingly different than us. So when I look at Arnold, I go, he is living up to his culture.
Maybe
it's
that's
not my
why
culture.
He married a Kennedy.
Pardon?
Maybe that's why he married a Kennedy.
He's whatever, you know. It's,
yeah, right, because she put up with him?
Yeah. It was prevalent in her family as well.
And you're skirting
it's
around the issue.
Every family, John.
John,
oh.
You're skirting around human nature. Let me get back to a point. The point with Planned Parenthood. Because one of the issues right now is with World Health Organization did a study, and it didn't just do a study. It took all the information that is collected from 42 million women who face unintended pregnancies and have had abortions in the world. 20 million are unsafe, mostly in countries where abortion is illegal. The result is 68,000 women die annually as a result of complications of unsafe abortion. Abortion's going to happen. One way or the other, it's going to happen. 2 million and 7 million women, between 2 and 7 million women, each year survive unsafe abortions, but they sustain long-term health, disease, and damage. Incomplete abortions, sepsis, hemorrhaging, injury to the internal organs, puncturing, tearing of the uterus, you know, unable to have any safe children in the future, or have children in the future. So when you're talking about this, this is a whole package that goes with Planned Parenthood. What do you do to prevent and help what nature is going to naturally happen? And John, those were good points. These are guys who are out there just saying, hey, I'm human. This is what men do. Except my husband better never do it. He's not around this household.
Okay.
My wife, you know, John, Ashley has an expression. She, whenever she sees this going on, she looks at me and says, Bobbitt, Bobbitt, if you remember Lorraine Bobbitt.
Right. I'll tell you what, folks. I'm going to break in and go to the phone lines. Unless I'm very much mistaken, we have the illustrious Andrew Ian Dodge on the line. Andrew, is that you?
Yes, it is. The illustrious. I've been called a lot of things recently. That's a new one.
John, Andrew, you just saved John Perry's life. A good time to check in.
Cool. Yeah, I've been working on my. I've got a TV advertisement that's coming out. It's due by Friday, and it's coming out the next week. And so it's interesting. It's always interesting when you're doing advertisements and trying to reduce your thoughts to sort of little chunks. It's going to be 90 seconds to 2 minutes, and it's sort of like, so I've been thinking in sort of visual terms all day. So what I'm doing right now, talking to you, is going to be my break from working on it.
Well, you know,
okay,
Andrew.
Question number one. We've been. I won't say arguing because we never argue. You know, we discuss, and we're talking about the women's rights issues, Planned Parenthood, etc.
Oh yes.
Where do you
I have this really interesting thing, and I have an amusing aside. I use the word I can't remember it. I'll tell you how burnt my brain is right now. I talked about eugenics in relation to Margaret Sanger, who founded Planned Parenthood, and how I thought it was inappropriate for federal funds to go to Planned Parenthood. And I was in a debate, and there's a woman in the race called Cynthia Dill, and she turned to me and asked me, what does eugenics mean? And the woman is running for Senate. It's a bit kind of worrying a bit. But anyway, ultimately...
I love it.
And she's a Democrat. It's kind of like, you know, you should know that this, any, if you mention Planned Parenthood, that someone might bring it up. I'm not against... women's health issues and stuff. I just don't think that Planned Parenthood should be getting federal funds, and I wary of those who are not pro-choice, as I am. I think it's not appropriate for the federal government to be giving any money to anyone who conducts abortions. That should be at the state level, done at the state level, not at the federal level. So it's kind of interesting. It's like, yes, you're pro. Are you pro-choice or pro-life? Well, and then I turn around and say, well, I find both of them to be unreasonable extremists. Usually, the look on the person's face is, what? You'd rather one or the other. No, it's not that simple, actually. Because to some people, pro-choice means, you know, late-term abortion, an abortion on demand paid for by the taxpayer whenever anyone wants it, And there are some people who, when they say pro-life, they mean abortion, no abortion, period. The mother, if she has an abortion, will be charged with murder, not even in rape, incest, health of the mother, as in period, none. So what, when you say you're pro-choice or pro-life, what does it mean? Because there are variations in both, huge variations, frankly.
Ashley, I have to drag you into this. Talk to him. Ask the questions.
Actually, I actually agree with what he just said. Basically, I totally agree with it. And because there is a distinction between, there's no absolute on both sides. In that aspect, I do believe, though, that you do have to have federal funding for it. Because I think that with 75% of the clients that the Planned Parenthood is taking care of is at or below 150% of poverty level. That means that you're going to have, and a large percentage of, wait a second, I think it was 35% were teens up to 19 years old are their clients. This means that if you don't have Planned Parenthood, the expense in the end is going to be vast because you're going to have sick babies. You're going to have babies that are, could be HIV. You're going to increase disease. You're going to have people out having, you know, illegal, unsafe abortions. They will revert back to, and that was the point I was trying to make with John earlier, they will revert back to 1916 when nothing was available. So if there's not a structure available to people who have a lack of education, they know nothing about sex. Their kids, their parents knew nothing other than, you know, there you go. I'm pregnant. They don't really understand the function of their body. And I think that education is essential. And part
I agree
with
you 100% on that.
Right.
Definitely.
The way you
reduce abortion is not banning it. It's by educating people about how those functions work and not acting like, you know, it's something icky or evil, icky, or just plain scary.
Right.
I mean, you might have people not making the same mistakes.
Right, exactly. And so, and right now with the fact that the federal government is decreasing and cutting, you know, and state level are cutting out teachers, you're cutting out education. So you're cutting out education in schools, you're going to cut out Planned Parenthood that's going to educate people, and now you're going to say, now the federal government's not good, we're going to just cut out Planned Parenthood altogether. What the heck? That puts you right back to 1916.
Well,
you know, and rape and incest right now is huge. The numbers are scary.
Actually, I want to hear what Andrew has to say.
I'm sorry.
I want to add one comment to that. If anybody on this telecast or radio cast had any parent have a conversation with them about sex when they were growing up, I mean, even in my 20s, that was a you couldn't discuss anything about it.
I did.
You did?
Oh, yeah. I have this, as Simon and I have discussed, I have this sort of somewhat European-tinged childhood where there were a lot of things where parents didn't discuss them at all. And basically, you know, they learned them in college because their parents had told them nothing. I was a bit more aware of life, shall we say. Partly because of living abroad in, you know, sort of in third world countries. Most people don't see a body when they're seven.
Yeah.
I did because we were in Honduras after a hurricane, after Hurricane Fifi, and there were bodies around. You know, it was, and they were on the front page of the newspaper, and, you know, in those kind of places, dead people, they're not squeamish. I mean, in the third world country. And so you encountered all those things at a young age. There were a lot of things, and it took me a while to learn this, by the way. I want to tell you that I thought when I got to Miami and when I got to, especially when I was in public school, you don't really realize that most people don't have anywhere near close to the same background you do if you're an oil brat, which I was, and you sort of look at people when they say some strange things or you say something and then they start picking on you because, you know, to you it's like, really, are you that ignorant or naive or whatever? And generally children when they're in eighth or ninth grade or seventh grade don't want to be called ignorant by some little twerpy upstart who speaks Spanish fluently. Didn't go down very well, as you can imagine.
But I must laugh at you that I was raised with a European background myself, and my parents would know better about discussing any of that. But, yes, I saw more of that in my life than others did because my parents were, in the European sense, were not sheltering me. But, by and large, British parents, and as I joke with Simon all the time, have never been known for particularly forthcoming with their children. And I know you lived and went to school there, and
yeah,
I'm sure you'll agree with me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. back to the other issue we're discussing. I think the biggest problem, I actually, it may air, I don't know whether they're going to use this clip, but I was talking to the head of Planned Parenthood in Maine, and she was very interested in what I had to say because she intended something, and she's used to people in politics in Maine either, you know, anti-Planned Parenthood or anti-all-abortion or pro, not nuanced as I have. And I sort of said, you know, something that Planned Parenthood could do that would be make life a hell of a lot easier? Change your name. Everybody else does it. Why doesn't Planned Parenthood change their name? Say, you know, there are some dubious things in our past, and rather than make this link easy for anybody to see, why don't we just change your name? Reflect the 21st century. It's like they've moved on. They've evolved. They're no longer the same organization. Therefore, it would help them a great deal, and it would help those people who want to support them if they just changed the damn name. I mean, am I wrong here?
No, I agree with you completely.
They had already changed their name, and I forgot what year it was.
Well, it was 1938, and they were originally called, I used to know the name.
And me too.
Birth Control. And it was something like American Birth Control. It had a really, American Birth Control League. That's what it was. So that wasn't helping them, as you can imagine.
Well, and the bigger issue to me is from a health issue. The health issue is just, you know, with HIV, you can't mess around with it. One person,
no.
The next person, the next person, the next thing you know, it's like that viral machine that takes over the whole United States becomes red. It just happens quickly because it's a virus. And so if you don't have Planned Parenthood and you have frightened, uneducated people or frightened people who are, you know, young teenagers or even 11, 12-year-olds who have been raped, because that's going on right now, is that they have no place to go. Where are they going to go if there's no Planned Parenthood?
So you think it has to be – see, I mean, I think where you and I disagree is I think it shouldn't be funded at the federal level. You think it should be funded at the federal level.
Well,
this
is one where I join Ash on. And one of the reasons I feel that way is because, you know, we have a bigger issue. And the bigger issue is not unlike China's bigger issue of worrying about our population growth in comparison to our economic growth. For example, if there are no Planned Parenthood in some of the minority areas, and let's call it as we've seen, the African-American community, it has the ability to expand its population so dramatically it could increase the welfare rolls in a very short period of time to a very dangerous amount, one that I hear parroted particularly by Romney constantly complaining about the number of people on food stamps. Well, if we have a lot now, aren't both of you concerned that we could have even more if we don't, the government doesn't take some steps to do something about it? That's a good point, huh?
But can you see how some people feel queasy about government actively pursuing limiting the population?
Well, I can see how everybody, including myself, gets queasy about this. But I also look at the bigger picture. Sometimes you have to take a look at that picture, and that picture in the United States is becoming a very dangerous one. And as we increase on the poverty schedule, Andrew, that everything that we talk about increases exponentially with it. And if that increases in the number of poor that are seeking welfare, then that's a very dangerous number.
Yeah, but that's one of the points that Sang made. I don't know how much you've read of her works.
Not enough. I found her kind of repulsive, frankly.
Well, she is incredibly repulsive. You know, she sort of made the same point, but she said, you know, she was specifically talking about the black population.
Well, yeah, but come on, let's stop it right here. Isn't everybody else? That is the core of this conversation. More of those services are being offered in the minority communities than anywhere else. And when you talk about this subject in any manner whatsoever, everyone in our government, including Romney, is remiss in not just telling the truth. We're talking about controlling
exactly.
The birth rates among the poor, right?
Yeah, and they won't talk about it in that way, no.
Yeah.
And of course, you also have the people who want to ban it all. And when if you really want to get them annoyed at you, you say, okay, you ban abortion. How about all these children? No one has a backyard abortion, none of that stuff. All these pregnancies that occur, I'm not even going to call them unwanted because they say God wants every child. Whatever. Whatever. Let's go straight up. What are you going to do with them? You know, are we going to have, are we going to have orphanages like they do in, like they used to have in Romania and Hungary and they're having now in Greece? I mean, really.
What do they call, come on, guys, my British roots, what do they call the work orphans went in England where they were forced to...
Well, actually, no, workhouses were for people who had debt.
Well, they're also the children.
Workhouses also housed
children.
My father-in-law was in one. His mother had quite a few children. She got something called, they called it milk fever, which we... I believe is postnatal depression, and she put four or five of them not an orphanage. It was called something else.
A workhouse.
A workhouse was for debtors. This was something different. And he and his brothers, and you know, I've heard him talk about them, and he became a successful businessman. Because of of that experience, actually, ironically. What's it called? Sorry, my brain isn't working. But yes, that actually happened, where you had these big families, and the mothers no longer could take care of them, and they all went to these sort of group homes for unable to be taken care of children, and they, you know, they were there until they were 16.
You know, it's a good thing they don't have in the United States, because even though I could afford my children, there are many days I would have thought about sending them there.
Right.
Especially your son. Your son was a lot to feed.
Yeah.
He was a nonstop eater.
Big boy, big man, that guy?
My son's about 6'4 and about 220, a pretty good athlete. And his idea of a good day was to go out and run 3 miles, come home, and attack my refrigerator. So even in his 30s, people would say to me, Where's your son live? And I'd say 3 stoplights from my refrigerator.
The first party that he couldn't make, the party for, like, Super Bowl, Manny said, oh, my gosh, you made so much food. What happened? Look at all this leftover food. I said, your son wasn't here. This is the normal amount of food for when your son is here. And we had food that I ended up freezing for weeks later.
Okay, Ashley, I do want to get back to the more important aspect. I know lots about kids and their eating habits, but are you concerned about women's rights with the upcoming elections? Because it seems to me that there could be a big shift here.
Oh, it could be a tremendous shift. And again, it starts with Planned Parenthood, and it goes across the board. The fact that, you know, Romney didn't even acknowledge that woman's, you know, with the, we talked about it before Andrew came on, how he didn't acknowledge once that he would make sure that equal wages, equal pay, you know, was something that would happen. You do know that a female nurse can do the identical job as a male nurse, and the male will make more money in this country?
Oh,
that's actually the case in the White House, by the way. Have you seen that study of the White House? Where
that's actually the Lilly Ledbetter.
Right. We were going to get to Lilly Ledbetter in a couple of minutes there.
What a great last name. I got to love that. You know, she should be a blues singer.
I agree.
Lilly
actually,
Ledbetter.
First time I heard the case, I thought she was.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but the interesting thing, of course, with all of that is Maine, I predict that Maine is actually going to be completely against the trend, and the Republicans are going to be slaughtered en masse as if they were baby seals in Alaska, because the Republicans are absolutely loathed in this state right now, thanks to our governor. He's done some good things, but let's just say his delivery method can be a bit thug-like. I think it's
important. Oh, that's a good description.
So there are a lot of good. There are good Republicans in the House and the Senate in Maine who are going to suffer badly. And Summers is not going to win the Maine Senate race. The two Republicans aren't going to win the House seats. And I think that the Republicans will be lucky if they don't lose the House and the Senate in Maine. The governor isn't up this year. So they're getting slaughtered here, and that's entirely due to local issues, which is going to be a very interesting counter-cyclical trend against the rest of the U.S., where the Republicans seem to be continuing on for 2010. And what worries me is about the continuing on for 2010 is that a lot of the people who were elected in 2010 completely, totally forgot the lessons of 2008. They completely and totally forgot the lessons of the Tea Party movement. They don't listen, and they got in. Yabu sucks. I'm in. Go away. And I think that the Republican Party may have a short-term gain and a long-term whole load of hurt coming down on them. And if, like the Tories in the UK, if they don't wake up and smell the coffee, they may no longer exist in about a decade or 5 years or a couple of cycles. Because they're just ignoring an entire section that is of the populace, which is right of center, which is doesn't give a damn, either doesn't give a damn or is he's a, on opposite side of most social issues. Like, you know, instead of bashing gays, I'm like, what's the big deal about gay marriage? That kind of attitude. And they're just completely ignoring the Liberty Movement, and they're also ignoring the Tea Party Movement, and now it's just a battle between the social conservatives and the centrists, the rhinos, the corporatists, or whatever you want, Christian Democrats, the way I would put it. And they're actively doing their best to reduce the size of the tent, which is the Republican Party. And that's not a very good way to have a future.
You know, we discussed this last time we talked, Andrew, and I thought about it quite a bit afterwards. You know, and one of the realities is at some point political parties come and go and die in our country, the Tories, the Whigs. The Republican Party of today was not born until the Civil War. And so this may happen again. And I want to switch over to John Perry, who's been so quiet so this morning. John, you're also a libertarian. Do you see the Republican Party having these kind of problems too?
Well, I'm no expert on Maine, but I would like to tell Andrew my favorite Speaker of the House in the history of the Republic was from Maine, Thomas B. Reed.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's, I'm impressed.
And I think we should be following.
Oh, don't be too kind to him, Andrew.
Oh, you can't be too kind to libertarians. It goes out of control. I know. Don't worry. I'm one of them.
No, Manny, like you say, there's ebbs and flows. And who can say? Certainly, with the population shifts, it's entirely possible a new party might be born. I don't know.
I don't know either, but this is the first time that I can think of my lifetime that thought had even occurred to me. And I'm not sure that any Andrew really had even occurred to him in this particular election, standing back and looking back at some of the events that we see going on. Andrew, is this the first time you've got up and said that this was a possibility in our country?
I think I said it. Well, I've been involved in the Tea Party movement since 2009, and I remember saying repeatedly across the country I believe I actually said it in the following words: if the Republican Party doesn't pull its finger out, it may be not long for this world. And what was interesting is that in most places where I was saying that, and this is when I did my 26-day, 8,000-mile speaking trip across the country, no one got upset about that. No one just said, you know, the Republican Party is here to stay. How dare you, you know, whatever. They were all saying, well, yeah, because everybody understands, everybody, no matter what state they're in, or what if they're activists and they've been activists for any time at all, they've encountered these, you know, nepotistic, insular, protective cabals that run either their county Republican organization or their town Republican organization or their state Republican organization. And you know that when they start closing in so tightly and basically, you know, changing the rules because they don't like someone, whether or not you agree with that person, and just, you know, arbitrarily throwing out the rules just to screw the supporters of one candidate, you know that that's a dying breed. That shows absolute desperation. And that's how, you know, despots behave in countries right before the revolution. The main Republican Party, and I would say the Republican Party nationally, is acting like a maximum commander in a third world country, you know, 5 years, maybe 10 years, before it all comes crashing down because you have a revolution.
I agree. And I think one of the things that we all accept is that too much organization, long-term time organization, becomes very similar to the expression of absolute power corrupts. And I look at something simple like the National Football League. Show my age, I started watching games in 1951 when my next-door neighbor took me to the NFL championship game in L.A. in which the Cleveland Browns played the Los Angeles Rams. I've watched this run go from a bunch of guys like Art Rooney smoking cigars, playing little cards in the back room, boozing with the players, partying, having a good time, to corporate ownership in the mold of the movie Rollerball, which is where it's evolved. And in its own way, as you watch the last couple of years of the National Football League and now the war between players and owners over too much control and over legislation, there's an analogy of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, where the organization becomes self-sufficient, where it becomes a surviving entity that eats anything that tries to slow it down. And that's basically what you're saying, Andrew. And the question is whether the Republicans have hit critical mass, and when will the Democrats? I thought the Democrats were in critical mass when Clinton came along because of their horrible run of politicians from McGovern to Mondale and people like Ferraro, who was an educated Palin, but no better than Palin in terms of what she brought to the table. They managed to survive it, and I think the Republican Party is headed for this critical mass, and until some eloquent leader comes along, it will continue to splinter and lose pieces of the Tea Party and other people until we're in shambles. And I think that's the next route. Do you disagree?
I'm not really sure about that. I think it may be on its death doors now. I mean, I think it's possible that in certain states, it's curtains. And I could really see the Republican Party of Maine becoming a third party as something else rises, and it's Democrats versus them and then the Republican Party, because they've just become this rump that reflects no one's values, and you have their chairman saying, if you're a Libertarian or Ron Paul supporter, please leave. We don't want you in the party. I mean, quite literally.
Yeah, I agree.
And people are telling me that it's not just Maine. If you have that, I mean, it's possible the Democrats might implode after Obama. I don't know, because they have a hard left wing, which is social democratic. I mean, in the European sense, SDU,
right, absolutely.
And then they have a more centrist wing, some of whom I know, who are I would say Kennedy-esque, and they're more like some of the centrist parties in Europe. And those they don't necessarily seem eye to eye, because one is more or less socialist, and the other believes in capitalism, but capitalism that's sort of, capitalism that's caring and sharing. I mean, we could have it involve where you have the Socialist Party, whatever you want to call them, a centrist party, which is sort of like the rhinos and the actual hardcore rhinos, and the Kennedy Democrats. I think Kennedy would be, Kennedy Democrats are a good way to describe it. And then you have a Republican Party, and who knows what that, you could have four parties. You could have a Republican Party, which is made up of social conservatives, and pretty much that's it. And then you'll have another party, which is more libertarian-minded and kind of classical liberal, let's just say. And I think that may be where it's going, because
you're underscoring to me the complexity that I'm talking about. Is a very uneducated country right now with very little control over its destiny. It's almost like a ship that's taking on water. And that's what concerns me about it, especially in an atmosphere where the people in our country have so little knowledge and education and the topics that we're discussing right now that they really aren't competent to make a decision. And I think these choices are going to be made by people who shouldn't. And it sounds like I'm discussing Adolf Hitler, because that's basically how Adolf Hitler came into power.
In other words, you're saying, in a way, it's when discussing, when people start describing what we're discussing as high politics or esoteric politics or whatever way you want, it's very worrying, because that's when a demagogue or a populist demagogue, someone like Glenn Beck, for lack of a better term, could come along. And I'm not saying I'm not comparing him to.
No, I know, but your point's very well taken.
But who comes along, and there are people who are Beckheads, or Beckwards, as a friend of mine called them, who he can actually, you understand it, that he's changed his mind 180 degrees, and they don't understand the nuance of the change of mind, and they don't understand the subtleties.
Okay, I want to change the direction slightly. Come January 1st, there's going to be a change in the tax code. Holiday of payroll taxes is going away. Now, depending on, you know, who you read, who you listen to, it's going to increase the tax burden by $1,000 to $4,000, you know, per person. Here's the thing. Everyone's talking about not, you know, increasing taxes, but none of them are talking about this particular issue. Why is that? Who wants to jump in on that one?
I think there's two things. I think ultimately the people in D.C., all of them, want sequestration, because ultimately that'll mean that it's not their fault. So politicians never want to have to accept blame for a problem. Remember that. They don't want to ever say, someone said, well, I pay more taxes because you did nothing. They don't want that. So you have this sort of, they've turned sequestration into sort of this, I use the word esoteric kind of spell that will happen if they do nothing. So they're doing nothing. And then it will happen, it's not my fault, it was sequestration, I'm sorry, you know, whatever. And I think that's what they're going to do. I mean, in this state right now, we have this guy called Charlie Summers running for Maine Senate. He says we can't raise taxes, and we need to balance the budget. He has no ways of balancing the budget. He wants to continue being the policeman of the world. He doesn't want to make any of the, you know, he likes the Ryan or whatever plan it's called. Doesn't want to have cuts in Medicare. And anybody say, I don't want you to cut, he says, no, I don't want to cut that either. And they're just not grasping the nettle. It's just not. And it frustrates me that you have the end of the Bush tax cuts. Of course, you also have Democrats saying, why should millionaires and billionaires get a tax cut? And they're claiming, and then they talk about $250,000. $250,000 in Maine means you're rich, guaranteed. I understand. $250,000 in New York City means you're middle class, and you know you're getting by, but you're not exactly rich because it's so.
You
expensive.
Might survive.
Hey, by the way, throw in Los Angeles on that one.
Oh my God!
There.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I know. It's the same thing happens in the UK where they're going, oh well, you know, they're rich people, and then they they're talking about London, which is incredibly expensive, or any other capital city for that matter, except D.C. because who would want to live in D.C.
Right.
I have to say, founding fathers were geniuses, except they didn't realize that we'd get air conditioning, because they built their capital city on a swamp that they didn't want, that they figured no one would want to spend much time in. I mean,
yes,
swamp. Yeah, I want to win. I would like to be U.S. Senator for Maine. I'm not looking forward to spending time in D.C. I'm going to go there, do my job, and then come home and spend time with the people of Maine who I'm supposed to serve, not, you know, live in D.C. Because it stinks. It's awful.
You know what? As a kid, I remember the one and only time I'd gone there as a little girl. It was magnificent. It really was wonderful. I was in awe over the White House. I thought it was spectacular. And Manny and I went there a few years ago. I was horrified at the changes. We had gone with the All-Star game, and I was just horrified. It was dirty. It was so fenced up that it looked like, here's the White House, but you can't dare go near it. It's like, wait a minute, this was my house. As a kid, I viewed it, this was my president and my house, which is part of the change. It's like, what happened to this is my house in the White House. You know, come visit us.
Yeah,
no, it's funny because in a strange way, Ian, that's become a symbol of the fact that the White House may be held in hostage. So there's
it is. It's like this ugly big fence around it and terrifying people at night.
You know, I agree with you. I mean, another example is the House of Commons. I used to walk in there, literally, when I worked for various pressure groups and think tanks, I would walk from my office, walk into the House of Commons, get my, you know, who you're here to see, here's my pass, and I walk in. Now you have to go through this zigzag thing and metal detectors, and you get a pass and the whole nine yards. It no longer feels like it's connected to the people as much.
Right. In fact, Manny made a mistake and made a left into a – Manny made a mistake and went into a parking lot, and there were they police cars or what were they, security cars?
No, I had forgotten that they blocked off 10 Downing Street.
Everything's blocked.
And I made a mistake of getting near 10 Downing Street, so you know what the response was to that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But what we're talking about is what we started here with creating an atmosphere for someone like an Adolf Hitler to take over. And usually that's what happens. People start looking for a stronger dictatorship. So now we have a presidency that's isolated behind tall fences. The president of the United States no longer feels comfortable walking around shaking hands like they did for centuries, although I'm sure McKinley wishes he didn't. And, you know, and there was just, you know, sort of a problem in our country where this is being dictated by times that are as dangerous as they, close to as dangerous as they were during the revolution. I mean, we are in a form of a revolution.
And, Andrew, I wanted to get back to something you were talking about with the change of parties and the fact that I think that one of the most disturbing things to me is, you know, we have a society now where we have to have fact checkers, because the fact checkers are people who are going to say, our president lied. Mm-hmm. And the other man, he lied even worse. So they're both liars. And here we are, we're showing you on the Daily News, you have liars to vote for. And then you go to the Internet and you go look up the research and you look at the bottom and you go, oh, that other party put this information in there. Well, I'm at least educated enough to look at that area to say that other party put that information in there, therefore it's tainted. It's not the truth. But your average American who does not, and I shouldn't say that like that, not an average American, but an average, let's say, get back to Planned Parenthood. We're going down to this Planned Parenthood group who have children who are lesser educated because they become lesser educated based on their economics, and teachers are being pulled right now because we're cutting budgets for teachers. And so there you go. You've got that group and other groups who are less educated going to the Internet, going to their libraries, going wherever they can to have access to the outside world, reading material that is based on tainted material. And I think that's also hurting the parties right now.
No,
I have to invite John. John, you must have a couple of things to say.
I actually wanted to ask Andrew a question.
Yes, sir.
That I've been stewing about. Who does he root for, Cape Elizabeth or Mountain Valley?
In what?
Football.
I don't follow sports.
Oh, okay.
See,
well, you lost my vote.
Reference didn't work. Ah.
Well, I follow motor racing, but whether you call that a sport is, yeah, you know, you could.
Andrew, there was a great show. I think it was HBO. It was called The Rivals, and it's about the football program.
John, put your batteries back in.
Okay. That was a good show. If you guys get a chance to watch it,
I've never been interested in sports ever, and
right.
Partly because I suck at them. I mean, the only two things I was good at was, or are good at, is pool and darts, and both generally involve drinking beer. But no, I have the athletic ability of a, and this is really insulting to sloth, but I have the athletic ability of a sloth. So I was crap at it, and therefore I'm not interested. But I can drive a car, and I drive a WRX, and I like competitive motor racing, preferably on road racing specifically.
Hold me back.
So I actually do watch NASCAR. I prefer them when they're on the road race tracks, but I watch NASCAR.
Are you a Grand Prix fan?
No, most boring thing ever.
I'd rather Grand Prix than watching a bunch of guys going around in circles telling
it dizzy. It depends on the track. And I understand that there some of those old style tracks that like half mile ovals that are just a bowl. I mean, I can't sit through that race.
Andrew, let me tell you, I'm trying to promote you here, humanize you, but don't tell people you don't like football back in your home state.
I don't talk about sports at all. I run away from that.
Okay, I'm going to shut the pair of you down. I'm going to go back to the basic question. You know, Andrew, you know, what are you going to do about the Lilly Ledbetter law? You know, if you get elected, you know, will you enforce it? How can you enforce it?
Well, I've always had something against quotas, and it's really ridiculous that the especially considering our president, that they don't have equal pay for equal work in the White House. I mean, that's just nuts. I don't know why you have this problem of why not pay people equally. And I just don't want to see legislation. I'd rather people did it without legislation.
Wait a minute, Andrew, I've got to address that. First of all, having employed more than my share of people, a large number, I've run businesses with as many as 700 employees, okay?
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to do this voluntarily. Any employee who you can push to earn a lower wage, employers are going to push to pay a lower wage. That's just the nature of the beast. That's who they are, and that's what they're going to do. It's never going to happen voluntarily. Number two, I don't see this as an equality issue, as you just mentioned. I don't believe, or quotas, excuse me. What quotas do you see involved? Just requiring equal pay is enough. I mean, you don't have to. If you don't think someone will do the job, you don't hire them. But I don't understand why this...
Oh, okay. Well, as long as you don't have a requirement, because I think Cynthia Dill is sorry, I've been hanging around Cynthia Dill, and she's sort of like, well, we should have more women involved in this, and there should be quotas. And, yeah, as long as it's just requiring equal pay, yeah.
I'm certainly against quotas, but I know from years of being in business that equal pay only comes when it's compelled, and I don't see it occurring any other way for that reason. And
well, you have more businesses run by women. That helps.
But the nature of our society is such as that isn't a reality at all.
I think that's changing, though. I think that's changing significantly because... there are enough IT companies with women running them, and I think technology and the move away from, let's say, manufacturing, which are more quote unquote male dominated industries, will allow. But I know people want to force the issue and would like equal pay for equal work now, and I understand that point of view. And
let me come back to something. Yeah, talking about educated women to me as a Republican. Scapegoat. We're talking about people who are competing for the lowest rung of the jobs or the ones that are always abused. You can't abuse someone who's a CEO quality woman because she'll take her PhD somewhere else. But most women can't take their PhD somewhere else. And those are the women we're talking about. The same way I think that people just don't deal with the fact that Planned Parenthood's really about how much you want to spend on the poor. Equally, I think this equal rights issue is an issue of major corporations controlling salary to women on the low end. And where this appears most is in the food service businesses, for example. And if you think about it, a woman who works in Taco Bell, I don't want to single them out, Walmart, let's get to the worst offenders. Walmart and a huge other ones have been sued, really, for conduct that I consider so egregious. It's embarrassing to the American America, but at the same time we have a Supreme Court whose view is that, gee, it's just too much on the periphery because they favor business. But the reality is those women are being severely abused, and there's just no two ways about it.
Yep.
that's the problem. And I know, you know, from my conversations with you, you don't support that kind of conduct in the American business environment. And that's why I, when you say that, it sort of bothers me because, as you're pointing out, you're running against somebody who believes in quotas, which I don't think anybody should support in any manner whatsoever. But when I listen to Romney, who is skirting this issue, and I would have more respect for Romney if he just said, got and said, I don't support the Lilly Ledbetter Act, and that's it. But instead, I think he's been sneaky. He won't really admit it. All people in his campaign says, no, he doesn't support it. If you look at his previous speeches, he doesn't support it. But it comes back to the fact that he's not being honest, which is one of the reasons why I believe the Republican Party is headed for a real problem.
Yeah, obviously I agree with you. Considering I'm not even voting for Romney, I support Gary Johnson.
I know that. Well, I'm not saying that these in any way reflect on your views, because I know from our personal conversations you are staunchly against so much of all this. But when you
and it just forces the hand of government, and then when you force the hand of government, you increase regulation, and you honestly feel like going, well, some of these companies, Walmart being a good example, always whine about regulation. And, you know, I've been known to support so-called big box stores when they come into an area and they say, oh, no, we've got to ban the big box stores because it hurts local business. And you're in an area where the local business is rubbish. And if you want decent service and to get any choice in whatever you're buying, you either have to go to the big city nearby or from the Internet. So, and you know, there are a lot of people who believe in free enterprise and, you know, choice and everything else. And then companies like Walmart slap us in the face by doing stupid things like that, which will, of course, invoke government ire and increase regulation. I mean, they're almost their own worst enemy.
I agree.
Okay, but Andrew, how would you fix it?
I'm not really sure. It's a difficult situation, and I don't really know how you do it, because I'm not necessarily sure that legislation would work per se. You know, you could even start by saying, if you don't have equal pay for equal work, the government won't, which, by the way, is a large spender of money right now, will not do business with you. I mean, they do that for other things, like if you have a racist hiring policy, the government won't do business with you. Surely the government could say, and I'm surprised if they don't, where we won't engage in your companies, we won't engage your company for any federal contracts or any state contracts until you have equal pay for equal work.
That doesn't work with retailers like Walmart. That works in the manufacturing sector. But most abuses occur in the retail sector, and that's what the problem has been in the past and what it's going to continue to be in the future.
I'm going to move on here. Let's move on to foreign policy. I've been watching Romney and Obama pretty closely. Romney loves to go after China, but I'm not sure it's a really sensible strategy. Yeah,
neither do I.
China's economy is slowing down a little bit.
A lot. It's down
to
40% to drop
right.
Below 7th and going to drop even lower than 7% in the next
and
year.
Yeah, attack our biggest debtor. That's intelligent.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's my question. You know, does it make sense to attack China? You know,
I think it's myopic. I think it's ultimately myopic, and just doing it in general terms is myopic. I mean, there are things that China is doing that aren't very good against us, spying and all the rest of it. But then just say criticize them for that. Don't, you know, create this giant bugbear, which is China. Senator Snow was one of that. She was actually itching to start a trade war with China. And you're just sort of saying, are you that stupid? It's just reduce the debt, pay off your debt, then start bitching and moaning about China. Don't do it when they hold most of our credit. I mean, this is just myopic and idiotic.
I agree with you. And I'm shocked when Romney hammers it. And, you know, basically speaking, when you look at what's going on in China, they're going to become one of the biggest consumers in the world. And the gamble is at some point they will need our goods to a point where they can't do without them and it will cost them more. I might also point out that it's causing them to invest, besides lending money to us, invest a huge amount of money in the U.S. And as I pointed out in the 90s to my wife when this all started, is the Japanese were going to buy all these things from America, and in the end they wouldn't have anybody to sell it to because the only people with the money to buy it were the Germans and the Americans, and they were too smart. And lo and behold, particularly here in Los Angeles, they started having to sell everything back to the people they bought it from about a third of the price.
Yeah,
so in the end, we're going to get them one way or another.
And
one
of the things, like with Japan, has had, you know, a flat growth for how many years? A decade now?
Yeah, at least.
One of the things that I keep waiting for somebody to expose or bring up, and it's sort of like once an event occurs, it gets swept under the carpet, and then it's forgotten. I can never look at Steve Jobs his speech before he died to the university was just so powerful, and it made me cry, and I just love Steve Jobs.
Yeah,
I was respecting tremendously.
I saw that speech. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that was just amazing, amazing speech. Then on October 21, 2012, across the world, the newspapers all released how the Chinese were forced to stand for 24 hours. Suicide nets were put around the Apple iPod Chinese factories.
Mm-hmm.
Toxin exposure and explosions. Not one single person has mentioned this and the fact that they are treating the people so poorly in China. And if you complain because they have there is a different culture there where it's not about the individual, it's about the group. So you are part of that group that are manufacturing this apple, and you have no rights to complain.
Mm-hmm.
So they have explosions of aluminum dust. They're killing workers, toxins. It's so bad that nets have been put around the top of their buildings to stop the workers from suicide. I guess I don't know if their concern is about pro-life as much as it is they may lose a worker. And it's not once, and I kept waiting, and I'm waiting during this next debate to hear somebody talk about the poor conditions in China in which the cheap products that we are accepting in this country, wearing on our backs, because you can't buy anything American. If you can, whoa, it's hard to find. And so everything is coming from China, including the iPads for Apple and the iPods and everything else coming for Apple. So here we are, and nobody is saying a single word.
There is only one person I can think of that could address that question. John, you're up.
Well, Simon, if you're asking me to disagree with the exploitation of international workers, I'm afraid I can't do it. You know, was that the question?
Well, no, the question is just in general, your feelings about what we're talking about and the fact that China is doing this in the back of its poor. But, you know, in all fairness to China, we have a history in the country, our country, I think it was called the Industrial Revolution,
mm-hmm.
where Americans did pretty much the same thing, right, Andrew? It didn't seem to stop anyone in this country from doing that to the poor.
Manny, remember
railroad. The Chinese are... There are. I have heard some defenses of from the Chinese people, manufacturers, and saying, well, you know, we started out so far behind, and when in the late 19th century, you weren't exactly kind to your workers, until you evolved, and it's kind of like a very disingenuous comment, really. I mean, you know, it's not. So does everybody have the right to treat everybody like crap? When do you get to a point in your manufacturing involvement where you're requested to behave differently? I mean, it's the same argument. There are people who are defend Islamists and saying, well, you know, their religion is not as mature as Christianity or Judaism. They're going through their, and it's sort of, or it's kind of disingenuous when you don't turn around and say, look, we should expect countries to behave in a manner which is reasonable and decent, and we should only try to do business with countries who do that. I don't necessarily believe it should be done in law. However, there is some decency when it comes to that sort of thing, which has been brushed under the carpet.
And one of the things that bothers me, too, is the fact that, now, if I'm not correct on this, Andrew, please to stop me. From what I understand, that the government has now, our government is now saying to manufacturers, once they start up over there, they're saying, okay, we inspected your factory, now you're on the honor system. It's happening in this country. It's also happening in China. So subsequently you go, okay, and then you have this Apple incident. I'm sorry, this is back in January 2012. And so you have this incident that occurred in China. Nothing more is done. Should have, like, stopped iPads from Apple coming into this country. We should have done something politically correct, you know, because this is about human beings again. Okay, we're going to talk about pro-choice and not have abortions because we're going to protect people and human life. And then we're going to turn around and say, no, it's okay to treat the Chinese human life differently.
Well, it's not that it's okay. Is, you know, we have economic issues. They have growth issues. We can't go over there and force them to change, and we can't start a war to force them to change. So in many respects, our hands are tied behind our backs. And as Andrew points out so well, we have to be careful about how we treat a nation who's, in other respects, being very, very good to us. China used to be our enemy. China used to be the source of a great deal of future concerns. And John, who's a Roman Catholic also, will remember back to when I believe it was Our Lady of Fatima, the letter or whatever it was, that said one day the war was going to start out in China and all this. And so there's been this kind of onus on China as the one who would start World War III, and the reality is they're not, and our problems are in the Middle East. So what we need to do is guide China through its industrial revolution as best we can and make them part of the world marketplace and entwine them in our relationship so deeply that they can never afford to start a war with us. And there's a lot of good in that. Yes, there are problems, Ashley, and there are going to be problems and during this growth period that all of us are going to deplore. But I just don't know how, from what I've read of capitalism, the history of it, this can be avoided. And I might point out here, because there's so much is said about Marxism, and I hear Obama accused of being a Marxist all the time, that sadly anyone who's read Marx will tell you that basically what he said about capitalism is true. I wouldn't want to change into any other form of government. I certainly don't want to be a socialist. But every criticism he has about capitalism and its flaws cannot be ignored.
Okay. I have to leap in. I'm getting growled in the in my ear by the producer.
Oh, eight. Wow. Time goes by when you're having fun, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah. Oh, love it. I want to go once round the table. Yeah, just because it's kind of fun. I'm going to start with John, because John's always fun.
All right, Simon, do I have a couple minutes?
Sure.
All right,
spit
try
it
to
out.
It just something to think about. This is why I don't believe standardization of payroll or government involvement is a noble endeavor, because there's too much history to prove otherwise. And I know, Manny, you're big on extrapolation because you use that in your email. I think of extrapolating theories and subjecting facts to critical analysis like Planned Parenthood, and it's not lost on me that with the expansion and growth of Planned Parenthood, there's also a growth of an expansion of destruction of the family out of wedlock births and STDs and a lot of negatives with it. And you have to ask yourself, why are they consistent? And then I'd like to end with a Soviet proverb, why I don't think government intervention works, just in general. And these are rhetorical questions. What do you call it when there's food in the city and not in the country? It's left-wing deviation Trotskyism. When there's food in the country and not the city, it's right-wing deviation Bukharinism. Nikolai Bukharin, I encourage people to look him up. When there's no food in the city or the countryside, that's called the successful implementation of the five-year plan. And when there's food in both the city and the country, that's the horrors of capitalism.
John, I love you to pieces.
That's as succinct as I can get. Simon, I love you, bro.
Yeah, that's, I like that. That's a good one.
Oh, boy.
Manny,
this is Andrew's. I'd rather go last.
Minutes to talk about whatever?
Whatever final statement you want. In your case, I'm going to give you an opportunity to talk about any statements you want to make about being elected and raising support, because I think people should send you money and they should take some step towards helping people with your ideas, which I think are essential to a democracy. And whether everybody else in the world agrees with you is not important. What's important is you are a voice of reason and logic and are addressing problems in our country that others are unwilling to do. And I compliment you, and I appreciate it, because you're standing up for liberty in your way.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that I'm the voice for logic and reason, it kind of scares me. That's how far we've fallen. But ultimately, I would really appreciate it if some of your listeners would go to www.fundly.com/dodge, the letter 4, Senate, and no end of slash. My website is dodgeforsenate.com. I'm currently working on a TV advert, which will be minimalist, surreal, and appropriate for the week before Halloween, and it will be up on my website and also on television when it runs, and it describes the horrors if we continue with the status quo. Continuing allowing the debt to go out of control and not dealing with it, and where you have people who sell that terribly awful banned product raw milk being arrested by federal police for selling controlled substances, and which happened to someone called Wait For It Farmer Brown in Maine. All those examples of big government drones spying on domestic American people, on domestic people who are not terrorists, and all the rest of these things. We need to say stop to the status quo. They're currently trying to scare the living shit out of people. On the right, they're saying if you vote for Obama, the U.S. will end, and if the left is saying if you vote for Romney, you know, there'll be people starving in the streets. Both are wrong. Obama and Romney are really not that far off, ultimately. After all, Romney invented Obamacare in Massachusetts. He's a Massachusetts governor. Give me a break. There are two sides of the same coin. They're not really that far off. Yeah, okay, Romney is slightly better than Obama, but that ain't saying much. Don't listen to fear tactics. Look at all the candidates. Make up your own damn mind and vote. Vote so you can walk out of that voting booth with a clear conscience and say, I vote for people I agree with who are principled, not I voted because someone scared the crap out of me. Vote
right. Andrew, thank you. I have to ask Ashley, do you have any parting thoughts for us?
I think that what Andrew is saying essentially is exactly what I've been saying. In the fact that not vote for Romney, but
I actually voted for Johnson.
You almost had my vote until that.
No, I didn't say vote Romney. I said I vote Johnson.
Oh, okay, okay. All right, good. I'm glad we clarified that. You may have my vote again. I think that one of the biggest issues gets down to exactly what you're saying. Really listen to what the candidates are saying. Really listen and read what each one of the props are issuing. Look at who's putting up what financially, and make your decision based on not somebody's money who's running an ad, or somebody who is like putting an ad with a little tiny markdown at the bottom of the internet, which is all propaganda. Look through the propaganda and find the truth. And in the truth, you will vote for the best candidate. You will make sure that you, even if you're unhappy with who wins, you will have done your part for this country as a citizen. You will have voted, and you will have taken care of your country the best way you can by looking at the truth.
That is a great comment. And Manny, I'm sure you have a quick rant.
Yeah, it's going to be quick. You know, I agree so much with Andrew. We're somewhat kindred spirits coming from a different political side. But the bigger issue to me is when Andrew complains about, for example, the whole milk issue, which is a big issue with Ash and I here
huge.
In California, we also see the reality that these are driven by people like Monsanto and other people who basically give huge donations and political contributions and then demand these things in return. In other words, if they weren't demanding this, absolutely no one would be enforcing that against these little stores. It's strictly a
farmers, little farmers.
Well, but the point is, it's the big corporations who want to shut down competition, and that kind of milk is a competition to them. The bottom line to all this is why I disagree with everyone, and I say it every week, is our problem is less than the presidency, because I agree with Andrew that there's much difference between them. The real problem is our problems with Congress, our problems and the way that we raise money for elections. Certainly, I'm sure that Andrew feels the sting of that and the discriminatory way in which elections are funded and advertising is being conducted in our country. And at the end of the day, until we get Congress under control and we get some level playing field there by not letting major corporations dictate what we do in this country by how much they donate to a particular politician, we are not going to get anywhere. And it doesn't matter who you elect, and everyone needs to consider that. The battle for our country is in the Congress and in the people who are getting bribed to do whatever it is they're voting for and push whatever agenda the corporations want. We are still a country controlled by corporations. Until it changes, nothing else will change. Thank you, everybody, for listening. It's time to sign us out, Simon.
This is Simon Barrett. And I always love a good rant by Manny. We will be back next week. Till next week, have a happy, safe, and healthy day. We'll be back. Bye.